Thank you, Catherine. So I'm really embarrassed now. Especially since my theory is that the longer the title, the more in construction the work is. So you can tell it's not very polished and finalized work I'm going to report on today. So anyhow, let's see how it proceeds. So the context in which this work takes place is that of video on-demand systems, peer-to-peer systems for video on-demand applications. And just to motivate things, I mean, there are people like Steve Ballmer, who's a CEO of Microsoft, who says in 5 years from now, all content will be delivered through the internet and possibly using peer-to-peer. And actually, it's already taking place. I mean, if you go to the UK and you want to watch TV, BBC channel or Channel 4, the main channels, you can get all the content of the previous week on the web through a peer-to-peer system provided by this Contiki company. So it's coming, and it's coming really fast. So and there's a lot of interesting work that considers scheduling aspects, and especially online scheduling aspects for those systems, which means I'm trying to access some content, then which blocks of the content should I get from whom now? So that's the online scheduling policy. And this is not what I want to talk about today. I'd like to talk about content placement issues, which are more of the offline kind. So it's not about online exchanges, it's more about placing content in an offline manner, which is something you can do in a VOD system where the content pre-exists. It's not something that, like a football game, is being created as you want to watch it. It pre-exists, so you can store it somewhere in the network and then leverage this pre-loading of content. So that's the main context. And there are basically two parts that I want to discuss. One is how do you use content popularity to do that? And the other one is how do you use user profiling, possibly, to do that? Okay. So as I was saying, my motivation is to preload data into a peer-to-peer system so that when you want to access things, you can go not only to people who are accessing the same content at the same time, but also to people who have useful content to you that has been preloaded there. And this is something that you could implement in any video on-demand system, be it deployed on PCs connected to the open internet, or be deployed in other systems more controlled, like a pool of DSL gateways that are run by a single ISP. And that's the context that we are more strongly motivated by, the reason being that my employer, Thomson, sells such DSL gateways to BT, to Orange, to many telcos. So we want to put lots of stuff on these and say we have added value and please buy our boxes. So we want to put peer-to-peer advanced functionalities on those boxes. Okay, so what would be the architecture of such a system? You'd have a pool of DSL gateways at users' homes, and these are connected to this so-called DSLAM, DSL Access Multiplexer. And then we'd add storage onto those gateways, which we would use to store content that's being sent offline at idle times from a video content server. And then when you, that's the push phase, offline push phase, then when you want to play back, what you do is you just try to access content locally, so bypass the video content server as much as you can, and hopefully this is cheaper because the cost might lie at the video content server. Okay, so what I'll first discuss what we do about popularity of content in order to perform such placement. So I'll describe a basic coding scheme which has interesting properties, then propose a linear programming formulation of the caching problem, and discuss some of the structure of the solution and open problems that remain to be solved regarding displacement. And then I'll move on to my second topic, which is about user profiling. So the first thing I want to address is how do I leverage the fact that some content is more popular than other? And the second is now I may want to use the fact that some users are interested in some content and not in others. So before I can use this kind of information in order to optimize placement in my VOD system, I first need to figure out what people like. And I won't go further than that. I'll try to propose schemes for clustering users according to their tastes and discuss how this can be applied, but not go into the application of that to placement. That's for future work. Okay, so the first part then. The coding placement scheme would be the following. So we take a movie, we chop it into consecutive data windows, and then for each data window we create erasure code, encoded blocks, that we then push onto the gateways at the user's homes. And here, for instance, I've pushed, for each data window, I've pushed one block at each gateway. And once I've done something like that, I would do the following when I want to play back some movie. I have one block locally for each window, so I need to collect k minus one other blocks to reconstruct the window. So I create sub requests, the right number of them, k minus one, and then I try to get the blocks from the boxes at my neighbors. So and I'll try to go to the least loaded ones, and I'll be able to get the blocks at the right pace without disturbing existing downloads from these boxes, provided there are not too many current downloads at the at those boxes. So the limit being dictated by the encoding rate of the video and the uplink bandwidth of the my neighbors. Okay. That's a fairly simple scheme. So we'd like to starting from that, we'd like to figure out how much content we need to push for each movie based on popularity. Okay, before getting there, if I can't place those requests to a neighbor's boxes that are not too loaded, then there are several things I could do. I could wait till some boxes become free. So that's the waiting model, and so we've done some queuing analysis of that, and there's an interesting model which is a mixture of a FIFO and processor sharing queue, but I won't go into that today. Then you could be just bounced, but the thing that we are going to consider here is that when you can't get it from your neighbors, then you get it from what you can't get, you get from some infrastructure server, and this is the part that we want to contain as much as possible. Okay, so the point of using erasure codes is that any box is equally helpful for your purpose, so you can do load balancing across the pool of boxes. Another feature is that we store the same amount per for even moving a box, we use the same memory amount. So this is something that has interesting features if you don't know the tastes of users. I'll come to that. Okay, so what I'm going to say about that is fairly simple. And we have more open questions than answers at this stage. But let me go through them. So the system parameters we have to formulate an optimization problem are the following. We've got this set of users, U of them. We've got memory M and uplink bandwidth B at each user. We could extend that to make for a heterogeneous environment, but let's stick with the simplest case. We've got F movies, and each has a duration of T seconds and an encoding rate of R. And then let's assume we know at the peak time, peak hour, let's say 9 p.m., or whatever peak time is wherever you are, we know the number of concurrent requests for each movie. So we've got this profile, and that's the popularity input into the model. And now the aim is to preload data for each movie in such a way that you will be able to cope with the demand profile at the minimum cost on the infrastructure. Okay, so we can, there's a little tweaking, but there's a reasonably simple formulation, formalization of that. So basically we'd like to maximize the top line, which can be seen as the playback rate that need not be supported by the infrastructure. So for a given movie, the first term M sub F over T describes the content that is locally present at your box, so you don't need to get it from elsewhere. And the second term describes what you're getting from your neighbors, right? So there's a memory term and a bandwidth term, and we'd like to maximize this combination. Now the variables over which we optimize are the memory one, M sub F, and then the bandwidth one, lambda sub F. And we've got a couple of constraints. So these are related to the resources at the boxes. These are fairly natural. And the we've got other ones that should come up. Okay. One is that you cannot stream at a rate, I mean, you could send several times the same data, but that's not useful. So you don't want to. So that's the first constraint. And the second one is that people don't want to receive more than once a movie, basically. So, well, that's essentially it. And it's got sufficiently nice structure so that you can figure out something about the optimal solution. It's got this very simple shape that if you order movies according to their N sub F value, that is the value of their popularity, then you'll be the outcome will be that you'll want to partition movies into three categories: the most popular, the hot content, then the warm content, and then the cold content. And you'll want to store fully the hot content at all boxes in your neighborhood. The warm content you'll store minimally. That means that to get it, you'll need, I mean, it will be spread only once through the neighborhood. So you'll need to talk to all your neighbors to get it. And then the cold content you don't store at all. So, and then the width of the hot and warm categories get determined by the resources at the users. Okay, so that's essentially what I have on this. And this may there are more open questions than results at this stage. So this could inform, for instance, strategies to determine what you store. You could imagine some caching strategies if you determine popularity on the fly. You may want to have these to figure out thresholds and determine whether you want to take an aggressive caching strategy or remove altogether everything related to some content you've not seen. So there's something we could implement from that. So let's see other comments. So if we believe this is a viable way to do placement, there are a number of things that come out from the model. For instance, we can determine when we have enough resources to not need infrastructure at all. That's when we don't have any code content at all in this model.
These solutions are suggested by a model you wrote
directly? Yes. So it's it's basically the solution to the LP has this structure. Right. And the worst case is when the popularity profile is flat. Every movie is equally likely to be seen. And in which case you don't need to do that. You can you can store equally equal content per movie. And but given a total number of requests, this is the worst case when popularity is flat. So the more skewed the profile, the more savings you get in terms of bandwidth.
And then the profile is from the NF.
Yes.
So the US, the profile is substantially skewed. I don't know what it is in France, but I know that, you know, they have done some studies where essentially 10, roughly 10 movies constituted 80% of all movies that were watched on video.
I think it would be similar in France. You know, there is very much a zip-like distribution with some...
I don't even see how you get these three categories. It seems in that case, two should be sufficient.
Well, no warm content in between, you mean. Yeah. And there's one catch also, which is that you need to assume everything is known to get that. And this is a big assumption. But if you know that there are these few movies that everyone wants to watch, then this hot category definitely shows up. And
so is it possible that the specific values of the
oh, it could be, I think. Let's see. I think so, yes. All options are feasible. It could, in fact, there are boundary movies, but and you could really shrink any category in that case.
The LP has some kind of threshold
structure? Yeah, you've got one threshold dictated by the bandwidth resource and one by the memory resource, and this is what comes out. And so, I'm returning to this point that this relies on storing the same amount per movie on each box. So what we could show is that it's got some optimality property when you are unaware of the preferences of users, and it's kind of a pessimistic optimality statement that if you can't cope with the if you can't be self-sufficient using this homogeneous placement across boxes, then any other placement would fail on one particular way of users making those requests. So you see here, you've got the movies, n sub f is the number of requests to that movie. Then you've got the users on the other side, and the requests may come from any of them. So when the homogeneous placement fails, then any other placement is such that there is an assignment here that would also lead to a failure of self-sufficiency of the homogeneous case. However, if we knew who wants to watch what, then we may have further benefits by moving away from this homogeneous placement. Okay, so a further comment on that is regarding the assumption that we knew this demand profile. So if you don't know it, and if you assume, say, it's stochastic, things are rather different. So for instance, that's one particular case where I assume these are Gaussian, and I assume also that I can do my placement so that with a decent probability I will be self-sufficient. And now the optimization problem I could formulate is, let me maximize the probability of being self-sufficient, right? And so if I do that, I've got storage quantity M sub f that is going to depend now on two there are going to be two common parameters A and B, and these are going to weigh the mean of this mu sub f divided by its variance, and the other term is weighted by the variance only. So you see, this is going to be a smooth version of the previous one. Okay, so this is just to, I'm not saying we want to do that, but this is also to say that there's a lot more to be done in order to figure out how to predict the demands here. And once you've got a reasonable assumption about the expected demands, how to do the placement. But that's it for my first topic. I'm now going to move to user profiling, so which is basically to predict the tastes of the users by putting them into clusters corresponding to one profile, and then once I know the profile someone belongs to, I'm going to use the tastes of people in this profile to do predictions. Okay, so the initial motivation is further optimization of placement, as I was saying. Another application is the design of recommender systems, whereby I'm telling the user, look, this is what you've liked in the past. You should be interested in this content. Actually, you can bundle the two. I mean, you make recommendations and you do a placement underneath, and hopefully people are influenced by your recommendations, and off you go. Okay, so we started this work actually when Peter was visiting in Paris, and he introduced me to this Netflix problem. You've probably heard about that. So we've got this great data set with 17,000 movies and about 500,000 users, and they've rated like mad, those movies. So we can try our schemes on that, and we can compete for the million prize. But so the first question we tried to address would be how we would split the million if we got it. But now we've figured out we probably won't get the million, but we've got the theorem. Okay. So there's Netflix, which is reasonably centralized, but you may also want to implement recommender systems in more fancy environments like Facebook, which is this online social system. So you may have people having their friends on Facebook, and they've liked some content, and you'd like to utilize what others have liked to do that in this distributed online social environment. Okay, so we consider a model to specify how we cluster users, and the model is as follows. That's known in the literature as the planted partition model. So there are underlying clusters of users which you don't know, and for each pair of users we assume we can observe some level of conflict between them, or some level of disagreement, and that will be normalized between 0 and 1. And in the Netflix context, that could be, well, the thing we used when we tried the experiments was the normalized number of movies that they differently. Okay. But the statistical model is as follows. We assume that these are symmetric quantities. We assume these are independent when we consider different pairs. This is debatable, but we have to start somewhere. We have also this assumption that if people belong to the same cluster, then the average, the expected conflict level is some value P, typically smaller than the value Q, which corresponds to the case where they are from different clusters. Okay. So I'm now going to get into the algorithm. Yeah. So in our test, we would set them zero conflict, but that's debatable. This is the theoretical model. Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, there's another approach, which is to say, if you haven't watched the movie, then this is like a particular kind of rating, and you may. But if you really want to get the million, then you've got extra information like at what time people did rate a movie, at what time the movie was released, and so if someone has not rated a movie which has been released for a long time, this is probably a strong indication that he doesn't care about it. If the release is more recent, this means something else, and using this time information, maybe you would use the absence of rating differently and include it in the conflict or not. Yes, this does convey some useful information.
What is Netflix problem? What is the general
$1 million?
Okay, so they have a public database, all those ratings. You can access that. Now they issue some questions, which are, this user rated this movie at this time, what was the outcome? And you've got a list of questions like that, so you submit your answers, you train your machine learning schemes on the public database, then you send them a list of answers, and they measure the standard, empirical standard deviation of the errors of your answers. And if you beat what their in-house tool does by more than, 10%, then you get the million. Yeah.
And they keep the software.
And they keep, to get the million, they can use freely your software. Exactly, that's the catch. This is a very interesting way to fund research, in fact. Yes, there's, I mean, what we can prove at this stage relies on this assumption that the intra-cluster conflict level is homogeneous when you move from cluster to cluster, and the inter-cluster conflict level is also independent of which two clusters you're considering.
Is that reasonable?
No. I mean, we started with... I don't like either the independence assumption because, I mean, if you have rated differently some kinds of movies, then you may look a bit more like someone from one cluster, and this is going to be correlated with all the conflict levels with everyone in that cluster, so it's more like the kind of correlated random graph you were discussing, so it's also a not entirely satisfactory, but let's accept them for now, perhaps. Okay, so here's the algorithm we propose. So the step one is to find for each user what we call a suitably denoised descriptor. So we need right descriptors that are going to be similar for people from the same cluster. And how do we do that? Well, we form the Laplacian matrix of the conflict. So basically, the off-diagonal terms are minus the conflict levels. The diagonal terms are the terms of the off-diagonal row terms. And then we do an eigenvector extraction. So we extract k minus 1 eigenvectors associated with the top k minus 1 largest eigenvalues. Actually, there are clustering algorithms that interestingly pick not the eigenvectors associated with the top eigenvalues, but with the second smallest, which corresponds to this. This is the Fiedler vector, so it is kind of different to some of the algorithms that have been proposed. And once we've extracted those eigenvectors, for each user u, we assign it as a descriptor the coordinate of the normalized eigenvectors. Okay, and once we've done that, we are almost done, we'll do any kind of crude clustering on those descriptors. So the one we can, for instance, analyze is the following. We pick a collection of candidate representatives of clusters. Then we pick the two best ones according to L2, merge them, we kill one of them. And we keep doing that till there are only k left, so that we have one exemplar per cluster. And the thing is that with a very high probability, under some assumptions, we will have retained one representative, one exemplar per cluster. And so once we have those exemplars, we just assign users to the exemplar that is closest. In terms of the L2 norm between the descriptors. Okay, so the result we can show is the following. So we've got these QNP parameters. We assume that the contrast between the two Q minus P is of order of at least of the order of P. then we assume the following. So this kind of scaling will be reminiscent of what we saw in Armand's talk. So the contrast Q minus P we assume to be large compared to log U over U, where U is the number of users. And so there's a prefactor omega sub U which goes to infinity with U. But it can go slowly, arbitrarily slowly. And then we've got a fixed number of clusters, and they have a size that is a non-vanishing fraction of the total size. Okay, so what we have is that the algorithm will partition with high probability almost all nodes correctly, provided we take a suitably large collection of initial candidates for exemplars. And here the size of this parameter array, this has to be large but not too large, and not too large depends on this omega prefactor. Okay, so right, I'd like to go into the proof ingredients before I comment a bit on previous work and discuss some way to apply that, and I'll be done once I've done that. Okay, so proof ingredients. You have to analyze the expected Laplacian, which has a very simple structure. And so what you find is that the top k minus 1 eigenvectors are constant on clusters. They have constant values. So in other words, the eigenspace associated with the largest eigenvalue consists of vectors which have sum equal to 0, and which values are constant on clusters. And this is why we can hope to do good things with this algorithm. Okay. Another nice feature of Laplacian is the following. If you look at the corresponding quadratic term for some vector z, then it's going to be lower than what it could be if you had an eigenvector corresponding to the top eigenvalue, minus some term that is related to what I call the intracluster variance. So if you are basically, you have to be close to constant on clusters if you want to achieve something that is close to what you would get if you were when in the eigenspace. Okay, so once you have that, what you need to do is to control the perturbation in the stochastic model that we have. So we've got this perturbation matrix L minus E of L, and what we have is that its spectral radius is small, I mean comparably small with respect to that. So the way we can establish that is that there's a seminal paper by Furedi and Komlos in 81 which analyzes the spectrum of symmetric random matrices, and that's been used by many authors, and we rely on that plus churn of bounds to control what happens on the diagonal of this perturbation matrix. And essentially when you combine these two things, you see that the top eigenvectors of the Laplacian, so the expected perturbation, must be such that this normalized intra-cluster variance has to be small, right? Because you know, if it's large, then maybe you can gain from the perturbation matrix, but not much, and you will lose here. Okay. Okay, so that's for the proof ingredients. So the good news is that it improves upon a series of results on a similar models. So that, there have been results by Bopana, who looked at the case of two clusters and who had more stringent conditions on the contrast. Karp and Condon had also a rather different kind of algorithm that also had more stringent conditions that also relied on two clusters. And Frank McSherry in, I don't know when, in 2001, I think, or in these years, had very interesting work, which takes a rather different approach, but which also relies on controlling the perturbations on eigenspaces. That again, his requirement on the contrast level is more stringent than ours. And in those previous works, the work of Bopana stands out because, well, he shows that he's got an algorithm that is rather different, that will succeed under some parameters, but he also shows that he can produce a certificate that the algorithm has found the right partition of the graph. Well, this is an NP-hard problem, so it's interesting to provide a certificate that you found something that's hard to find. Well, we don't provide any such certificate. Okay, so another comment is what's fundamental about this omega log u over u bound on the contrast? So what we can see, at least in some cases, is that if we were not bound by computational power, we could try all possible clusterings, and we could, and say, use maximum likelihood to find the best one. Then we could go bring it down to something large compared to 1 over u. So we would kill this log u factor. Okay, so we thought first, maybe our scheme is so good that it's our analysis that is not sharp enough at this stage. But now we are convinced that the scheme fails if we go below this omega u log u over u. So we need to augment it, fix it in some way, or change it. But, I mean, it's not clear what you can do if you go to different scaling. Okay, so briefly I'll discuss one application of that kind of scheme. So let's assume that we've got originally these data, these conflict levels, and let's say that the maximum conflict level is non-vanishing. This is something order one. And now what we can do is we can set to zero many such conflicts. We can create an overlay, basically, between the users and care about the conflict levels for those pairs of users we have retained, right? And if our probability of retaining one pair of users is set to omega u log u over u, then effectively we are, if we started with a model like the planted partition model, but with order one parameters q, then we would be assumptions of our results. So we can create a sparse overlay for which the conflict values over the edges of the overlay fit meet the assumptions we have. And then once we have that, then let's say this overlay is something like Facebook, and we are talking to a reasonable amount of users, but not too many. And so we'd like to determine which cluster we belong to on this kind of distributed environment. So that's a very algorithm that if you've done signal processing, you've heard about that, maybe. This is Oja's algorithm. And this is an iterative method. This is typically used to find the eigenspace of a correlation matrix of a noise vector. But we can use it to find the eigenspaces of our Laplacian matrix. So here's the iteration you would have, where W sub T is the rectangular matrix consisting of our candidate eigenvectors at one stage. So the interesting thing is that it's almost a decentralized update that you can do. It's not exactly decentralized because of the following. Computing those matrix products involves two things. There are local exchanges between your overlay neighbors, and there are non-decentralized steps which involve collecting input from everyone, send them, and then send them back to everyone. So if we can do this kind of aggregation and broadcasting, the rest is decentralized. And we can do gossiping or things like that to aggregate. So that's, I mean, we can make it to decentralize. So we've got one way of implementing this kind of clustering in a decentralized environment. And then once you have that, so that would be like the original overlay. You do the identification of eigenvectors. Once everyone has its own descriptor, then it's easy to do clustering in the descriptor space. And if you want to get advice about something, you can run a query in descriptor space and collect back answers. Okay, so I'm done basically. So there are many things we would like to do. We don't know if we'll do them. So it's an interesting question whether there exist polynomial time algorithms if we relax our assumption on the contrast parameter Q minus P. The homogeneity on Q and P is heterogeneous environments, this would be an indication that we have somehow robust schemes. And then the whole placement issue is wide open. Okay. And I'm going to stop here.
You as a
this is more fun.
That's different. Let's get to the real problem. In the sense that there is Thompson who's interested to do this, right? To create this profile. So why would they be interested?
These are two different environments, I guess. The controlled environment where you have all the DSL gateways that are run by, say, Orange or BT. They can afford some level of centralization, and it's very natural. So the online social network is rather different. That you may not want to.
You mean to say each user would like to find which cluster they belong to?
You could design something like an application that runs on one of those online social networks that. You're submitting some information that's personal to you, some ratings you've done on content, or you're publishing information about your taste, and then the application automatically spits out recommendations for you. And maybe you don't want to do that in a centralized way, collecting all the information provided by everyone in these online social networks which comprise millions of users. So you could do something. That's a different setup.
Yeah, I'm just saying that sometimes I think that these problems are of independent interest themselves, to rather than try to push in the direction of things just because we did them in networking from a certain context, having the need for distributed stuff.
This was as an afterthought, actually, using Oja's algorithm, trying to make it different. It seems you can do it, but eigenvector extraction and doesn't need to be done in a distributed way.
Other questions?
How big is K in the application?
So that's another thing that comes out from what I forgot to mention is that it performs reasonably well on Netflix. Basically, you're off by one star. People rate content by between 1 and 5 stars, and with our method, but also with quite a few methods, we're off by one star, and Netflix they're off by 0.9 star. One thing is that when you look at the spectrum of the Laplacian, if the model is right, there should be a drop after K. So that allows you to figure out the number of clusters. And on Netflix, we found that 9 clusters made sense. And there was another drop at 13, but so it does not follow the Plantin partition model. but that was expected.
Same as a question.
Yeah, sure. The question back to the first problem that you were discussing. So, should the memory capacity be given, I think, then we expect that the solution improves as you increase the memory capacity. So, potentially, you could also try to optimize for the memory capacity. And I was wondering if you thought about it, any insight, like, how is the memory capacity, for example, depends on the steepness of the air.
We haven't tried to do that, but yes, I think that's something we could try. Well, the only thing we've done so far was to plug in ZIP popularity distributions and see how the steepness of the ZIP distribution would affect the cost. It's interesting. I don't know, but definitely I think we could figure out the sensitivity of the cost to the memory as you modify the steepness of the popularity distribution. It would probably be captured by Kuhn-Tucker multipliers of the linear program as well. Yes, that's an interesting thing, but we haven't tried yet. I can't.
Thanks a lot.